I'm Leanne Tran, psychologist who's worked with families whose kids don't fit the mold for almost 20 years. I've worked with children for decades, but I know parents are the real change makers when it comes to their kids. Having three kids of my own means I know it's not easy. Parent Like a Psychologist is all about simplifying how you support your kids with psychology information filtered through years of experience to take you from overwhelmed to confident. Come on in. Hi, thanks so much for joining me again on this episode of Parent Like a Psychologist. I'm going to talk a little bit more about sleep today and lead into sleep hygiene, because last episode covered melatonin really quickly because it's a small little topic, but I really wanted to highlight a lot more about where melatonin might fit in to the bigger picture of sleep. And so last time I talked about melatonin and how to use it and mentioned to use it in the in the context of good sleep routines and sleep hygiene, but I really quickly glossed over that bit. So I'm going to go over it in more detail today. In fact, there are 10 points I'm going to cover about sleep hygiene. So that is quite a lot, I think. Bear with me. Hang in there. And it's important to remember, well, I mean, not important, but just know that it's not going to be all things that you need to do. Some of these points are just about the importance of sleep and the sleep hygiene bits. There's not 10 things to remember because none of us would be able to do that. So to start with, number one is about the importance of sleep. Sleep's really important for our kids' development. But more than that, I always say that if kids aren't sleeping well, parents aren't sleeping well. And that has a really big flow-on effect because we need sleep to be able to function at our best. So if our kids aren't sleeping well and not functioning well, and we're not sleeping well and not functioning well, then, you know, it's harder for us to help our kids out and we're all kind of having a tough time. So sleep is really important. The three reasons it's important, I think, is for cognitive development, for growth, and also for emotional well-being as well. So kids grow when they sleep. I'm not sure how many people knew that, but they do. The other thing is that they develop cognitive skills when they're asleep as well. So it's things like memory, problem solving, attention span, and all of that kind of stuff. So a lot of that development and neural wiring happens while we're asleep. Also, I think getting enough sleep contributes to our emotional stability as well. So that's not necessarily the thing that develops while we're asleep, but the more well-rested we are, the better we've got emotional resilience. We can regulate our emotions and manage stress and challenge as well. So sleep is a really important thing for kids to get enough of. There are a couple of things you can do to manage sleep and make sure your kids get enough. So I'm going to run through the rest of the strategies there and then talk about at the end when to seek help, like what some of the signs might be of sleep challenges. And so that you know, I guess, when's the point at which you might think, all right, this is bigger than what I can manage on my own and I'm going to ask for some help. So one of the biggest things you can do is create a consistent sleep schedule. And so I talked about that a little bit in the last episode. It's a lot about trying to get our bodies into the rhythm, a circadian rhythm that suits us. And it means that then that, you know, our body even is telling us then when it's time to go to bed. And that leads into a lot about what some of the challenges are for parents at bedtime with their kids' sleep. It's a fight to get them to go to sleep. So the more consistent you can be, the more their body internally will be telling them it's time. So the circadian rhythm is part of it. And so that's what tells us to go to bed at night and when to wake up in the morning. So it's that's you know we get that melatonin hit, which links into the taking melatonin as a supplement at night when things get dark and it tells us to go to sleep. And then in the morning, we can get a boost of waking, you know, that it's wake time by being out in the sun. And our brains getting hit by the sun is what kind of tells us it's time to wake up and get ready for the day. So that's why it's important to have that consistent time so that then that's natural rhythm can be established to have those natural wake times and natural sleep times. And probably all of us know, like I've heard lots of parents and friends of mine, and I've said it myself sometimes when you feel like you can go to sleep, but then you miss your window. And so that feeling like you've missed your window refers to the window refers to that really feeling sleepy. And feeling like, yes, now's the right time. That's when our bodies are giving us the signal to go to sleep. And so that's what we want to create for our kids so they get that feeling. The other thing is that, too, that children really do well with routine and predictability. And that's not just autistic kids and ADHD, as that's all kids. Consistency and routine is something that lots of kids crave because it helps them understand their environment and they feel safe through that. So there's lots of security and stability in creating routine. And also kids just know what's happening. And if they know what's happening, they know, you know, it's so much easier to get them to do what you want them to do, which is go to sleep. One trouble is the weekends. And I think when we're tempted to stay up later at the weekend, stay up later and get up later as well. I think that's, you know, if I'm trying to be, I'm thinking like really sometimes we all like a little bit of flexibility in our routine, and that's not such a bad thing. And I know for my kids as well, sometimes we'll stay up later on the weekend or on school holidays. But I think if you're having sleep challenges of getting your kid to sleep, to the point where it's a problem because it's keeping you up and them up later than you want, you've probably got to sacrifice that weekend flexibility at least for a little while until you get into this really firm habit of sleeping and waking at the same time. You know, research on things like habits tells us it's not so much about how many weeks we do a habit for. I know people say it takes however many weeks to set a habit and to how many to break it. That's not really the case. It relates more to how many times we do the behavior. So if you can be consistent even through the weekends, it's going to end up being a shorter time frame in which your kids get into this good routine. So I reckon it's better to do that. And maybe then you just enjoy the weekend nights. Once they're in bed, you can stay up a little later maybe and just enjoy it yourself that way, but try and stick to the routine if you can. So how are you, the next point I want to make is how you create a bedtime routine. And it's really about trying to maximize that excuse me, that relaxation and making it a time where we naturally switch off, the energy gets lower, we kind of become calmer and quieter, and that helps transition into bedtime. So, introducing or using some kind of winding down concept before bed is a great thing to do. And so it's a transition from the busyness of the day into other things. It's really important to have that be screen free because we know that screens activate our brains in a way that counteracts that melatonin effect. So often, I'd say at least 2 hours before bedtime, you've got to be having those screens away. Some kids do like the routine, or some families have the routine where maybe after dinner they might watch a TV show together. And I think that's probably the lesser of all of the evils. Research shows too that the smaller the screen is, the bigger that impact of the blue light and that kind of stuff has. So Phones aren't as the worst ones. Above that is iPads, and above that is computers, or above that is TV. So it's the least problematic thing you could do. And I think if you've already got that as a really strong part of your routine, you may as well stick with it until you know for sure it's not working and you need to change it. But trying to be as screen-free as possible. I think being involved as parents is really helpful in this routine as well, because lots of times kids don't want to go to sleep because then they will be apart from their parent and away from their parent. Sometimes that feels really unsafe or unsure for kids. So if you can be involved in their sleep, bedtime routine through either, tucking them in, reading a book with them or something like that. I'm pausing thinking, I don't know whether to, go there because it's a personal thing, but one of my kids and I have this little rhyme that we've gotten into this pattern of saying each night for bed. And it's just kind of evolved naturally over time, kind of building or riffing on each other. But it's a little safety routine. So anything you can do where you're involved in the bedtime routine helps kids feel safe and reassured. So then, optimizing the sleep environment. This is a lot about what sleep hygiene is about as well. So creating the environment that's really going to support kids going to sleep. The first thing is seems obvious, but it's comfortable bedding. So mattress, pillow that are good. And where that really comes into play is kids who, well, in my experience anyway, kids who have some sensory sensitivities more so. I think most kids are fairly happy to sleep in, if it's a bed with a pillow, they're pretty happy. But some kids with sensory sensitivities need it to feel right. And so it's really important to make sure everything in their bed does feel good. That's down to then too what they wear to bed. Some kids, like warm pajamas, some don't. So just let them wear whatever suits them. And then ensuring that the temperature is right as well. So that comes into what they wear to bed and how many blankets they have, whether you're using a air conditioning or a fan, a heater in winter. So if it's the proper temperature and there's ventilation and that kind of thing, it's going to be easier for kids to sleep. Again, here comes in the sensory sensitivities, and I know some kids like it on an incredibly cool temperature. I think that's another one too, where I think if the overall goal is to get your kid into a sleep routine where they're going to bed on their own pretty consistently, then for me, from my point of view, the temperature is something that's a battle for later. It's much easier to change those little things if they're just one part of what's an already really consistent, well-working routine. Yeah, that's what I think. People might differ. I know it's expensive, but anyway. The other part of the environment is lighting as well. So bright lights can prevent kids from going to bed, but also ambient light kind of has that sleep quality effect. So kids might not sleep as well. It's important with the light, I think, in the bedtime routine to be trying to soften all of the light that you can. So we have a saying in our house, like we don't use the big lights. So they're the big bright ones that usually might be on. And we have ones that are on, we'd either put lamps on, so the bedrooms have lamps rather than the big ceiling lights. And we use softer ones even right from dinner time, in the kitchen where we're eating. So from that, because for us and for a lot of families, dinner is the start of that bedtime routine. So that's the point at which we're changing the environment to try to instigate that sleep routine and the calmness. So the lights are down dim. We don't have music on, or if we do, it's soft and it's instrumental rather than like, concert vibes. And So that's how you can do it at the beginning of the sleep routine. Really make sure those lights are down low. And throughout the night, how you can manage the light is making sure that you might need blockout curtains if you're in an area where there's lights outside the room that are causing impact. And even to the point of then the other challenge is sometimes kids are woken up by the light really early, particularly in Brisbane in summer. I know down in other cities there's daylight savings, which works really well for this, but so you may want to consider the blockout blinds for that, or even a sleep mask if your child's happy to use that. Mostly older kids would be, I think, because it's a bit off-putting for little kids, but older kids who recognize that they get annoyed waking up too early from the sun. So those are a couple of considerations for managing the light and the environment. Next thing is nutritional considerations. This is a funny one because it comes up in tip sheets for parents a lot, and it talks about things like minimizing. Actually, no, it doesn't yet. So I'll come back to that. But so having a really balanced diet so that overall kids are feeling healthy can help contribute to sleep. And so not having, big sugar ups and downs and that kind of thing. It's important to have a bit of distance too between eating and going to bed so that because otherwise kids get that indigestion feeling or discomfort from that. And the other thing is balancing out drinking as well before bed. So if your child's waking up needing to use the toilet throughout the night, you may want to consider kind of making sure they've had enough to drink by earlier in the evening. But the one that I did want to mention was limiting caffeine intake. And this is the one that I think is a bit of a strange thing for parents to think about. And I was like, oh, of course, kids don't have coffee. That's silly. But then I thought, actually, I have talked to parents before who didn't realize that there was caffeine in Coke. And so that had been a thing that their child had been having. And I recently was even talking with my sister who had lemonade once that had caffeine in it, and she had trouble sleeping that night. So it's not just the obvious things. There's also caffeine in chocolate as well. And so if your kid loves chocolate, there could be caffeine in that. It's not something that means that you can't have it, but maybe just stop it at a certain time. So not after lunch or not after 2 o'clock or something like that. Okay. Next thing to think about, because we've talked about nutrition, is physical activity and outdoor play. And I think the physical activity is great because it's something that uses up energy. And so that is going to be really helpful for the sleep-wake cycle as well. I mean, like getting tired. So kids will get tired and they'll be ready for bed then. You may want to think about what is energizing and what's not. And so some people, doing exercise in the evening wakes them up, and so that might not be the best option. Because sunlight has a really good impact on that sleep-wake cycle, that's something you can use where maybe you try to do the physical activity in the morning. So you want kids to be up and out in the sun anyway. So why not use that time to do the physical activity? Because there's no way that it's going to a morning exercise is going to affect the sleep at night. So that's often a really much better way to do it, particularly if then kids are getting up to do something fun. You're not saying, come on, let's get up. You got to get ready for school. You're saying, come on, get up. Let's go walk the dogs or something like that. And then I think the other bit is probably that mental health component. So managing anxiety and stress. We know that often when kids have trouble falling asleep or not wanting to go to sleep, it can be related to anxiety and stress. So some things that you can do are, have bedtime conversations. So sometimes kids will bring up stuff at bedtime that they're worried about. And in a way, That's because maybe all the busy pressures and stresses of the days are over. And so if that's when your kid's bringing things up, that's okay. It's okay to talk about it then for a few minutes. And you might, but if you don't want that to kind of continue on, you might say, "Thanks so much for telling me. I didn't know some of these things. I'm not quite sure what the answer might be yet. Let me think about it and we can talk about it in the morning." So you're acknowledging your child, you've listened, but you're not really opening it up into a big conversation at that time. It's important that you are really open about this stuff so your kids feel comfortable to talk to you about what they're worrying about. Because that otherwise you miss those opportunities. And there are some things that you can put in place, like relaxation techniques that can help your kids. And if they're bringing up things at bedtime, that's a good time to prompt them and do it together with them would be my advice, because anything we're trying to get our kids to do is going to be so much easier if we do it ourselves. So some of the things you could do is deep breathing exercises, or guided imagery or meditation. There are a lot of apps that can do that. So if you're not a family who feel like you know how to do that, then just, try some things on some apps together. And they kids often, because I do this with loads of kids, and they will often, find that it is interesting and they do enjoy it. It just might take a little bit of, trial and error to find the right ones. So then what do you do if it's beyond this? How do you know if it's beyond the realms of normal? And I think, sometimes there are problems with sleeping during the night. So that might be things like really persistent snoring or waking at night and that kind of thing. And that's a time to ask for help, probably first point of call GP, sorry, or pediatrician. There are sleep studies and things that can be done for that to work out what the difficulties are. But if there's persistent difficulty falling asleep as well, and you've put in place a lot of these consistent sleep routines, say for maybe, 3 months, and it's not working, go and see somebody and ask for some help, because there might be an explanation. It can be like there's so many things that can contribute to sleep problems. It could be physical challenges, could be emotional, it could be something underlying. Like if your kids have ADHD and that kind of thing, that it's really common to have sleep difficulties, but also medications and things can impact it as well. So I think if your kid's on any medications, particularly for ADHD, I'd probably go sooner rather than later to talk about it if you're having trouble and you've put all this stuff in place already. Because, why do it alone? Get some help. Makes it a bit easier. And the last little point I wanted to talk about, I touched on a bit with talking about the relaxation, but I think it's really important that you remember as parents that you are the role model for your child. And sometimes we think, oh, that's like pressure, or, it feels like because we're not doing the right thing, we're responsible, it's our fault. And oh, I don't know, we all think that, like it's mum guilt, right? But dad guilt happens too, I'm sure. We're quick to blame ourselves sometimes as parents. But let's flip it around, which is what psychologists do a lot. I think use it to your advantage in these situations. So if your children are going to learn from you by watching you, and you're their role model, sorry, lead by example. And so some of the things you could do there are like prioritizing your own sleep hygiene and using your own healthy habits. So that might be things like, when you do turn all the lights down, and you can say, I'm dimming all the lights so that I'm helping my brain get ready for bed. You can, tell them that you and set your alarm or get up at the same time every morning, and so that you're showing them that you're consistently doing that as well. You can try to make a family commitment to it as well. So try, and that's by saying, that you're working on things as a parent, like in terms of doing the sleep routine and the hygiene and dimming the lights and that kind of thing. So you're doing it for you, but you can encourage and say, let's all try and contribute to this because, I need better sleep. You need better sleep. So let's all work on this together. Sometimes making that commitment too can be that if you've committed to do stuff like read to your child at night, you've got to be consistent in doing that, which is sometimes hard because it's the last thing we want to do at the end of the day. But if your child's holding you to doing that part of the routine, that's great. And it allows you to hold them to their part of it as well. So if they're saying, come on, you said you would read to me, and you go, yeah, okay. And I remember you said we'd do this. So yeah, I'm going to hold you to that as well. And being really consistent in enforcing sounds so tough, but be really consistent in following the routine, and the systems or rules you want to put in place is part of what's really important as well. So often, what I do with families sometimes when they're having these challenges is write up a bit of a timeline as well. So put in there the steps of things that you're going to do between, say dinner and bed, and put times on them. And that way, kids get a little bit of buy-in and a little bit of control about what's happening at bedtime. But then it also serves as a reminder because parents are tired. I haven't met one who's not tired. And we have trouble remembering all the stuff we're meant to do. So by working on it with your kid and doing it together, then you can put it on the fridge, photocopy it, put it everywhere, like fridge and in the bedroom, in the bathroom, so that it's a constant reminder of what you're all working towards. And in fact, I'm going to make a little template for that, so that you can use that at home, because I think getting your kids to buy in and commit to it, and you having a concrete visual reminder that helps you implement things consistently every night is going to be a winner. So that's a lot. I feel like I've gone over a lot. And there is a lot to it. But once you get into the habit of it, putting all of those things together is going to be such a win-win because your kids are going to know what the routine is. You've done lots of things to set them up for success, and then you're showing commitment that you're working on it together. So I hope this really puts into context, the place of melatonin is one little piece in this entire framework of thinking about sleep. So I'm going to leave it there because I am going to go and create this tip sheet. And I'll put in the back of the tip sheet the kind of routine thing that you can use to do, what's the word, collaboratively with your kids. So you both get buy-in, could put it on your fridge, and with any luck, or not with luck, with consistency, you will achieve great sleep and feel so much better. So thanks so much for joining in, and have a look in the show notes for the link. Otherwise, just look at the website. If you can't find it, let me know and I will send this sleep pack through to you. Thanks again for hanging out today. Thanks for listening to this episode of Parent Like a Psychologist. If you found it helpful, please share on Instagram so other parents can benefit too, and tag me at Leanne Tran Psychology so that I can say a big thank you. Head over to leannetran.com.au to join the village for bite-sized psychology tips straight to your inbox. I really hope this podcast has brought a new perspective and you a step closer towards a calm parent and a thriving child. Have a delightful day.